Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Ain't nobody got time for that today. Let's start off the show with some fat ass facts. Welcome, Jimmy C.
Hello.
Who let this fat fuck in here?
Hi, Tony.
Hey, beautiful.
Welcome to the Raw Reaction, everybody. I'm your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day 1 co-host, Tony Acero.
Hello to all these slut monkeys out there.
The line in the sand, Andrew Balazs.
Yeah, it's Monday again.
You know what that means.
The voice you just heard a few seconds ago, our former executive producer, Jimmy Christopher. What's up, Jimmy C?
Howdy do. I hear it's some sort of anniversary today.
It is indeed. Yesterday actually marked the 5-year anniversary of the very first episode of the Raw Reaction, April 28th of 2014.
Well, can't have a reaction or an anniversary to reaction without me.
How many kids do you have now, Tom?
You gigantic.
They broke it.
Kids, I've got three little monsters running around now. That's why I don't have time for anything else. I'm waiting to get off this phone so I can go to bed.
Right. I think Rick has like 8 kids now.
Jesus God. No means no.
Yeah, apparently nobody told Mary that. I want to thank you for calling in for the anniversary, Jimmy C. I really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, a little blast from the past.
Speaking of blast from the past, hey, Tony.
Yes?
I was looking through my email, and guess what I found?
Was it that nude that I sent you on accident?
Water under the bridge. We don't talk about that. Jesus, that's loud.
Raw Reaction with Harry Broadhurst and Tony Acero.
What even is this?
After that, it just delves into the modern era of Papa Roach and Nickelback, and ain't nobody got time for that. It thinks like a minute and 32. That is our very first Raw Reaction theme song from the first episode of the show.
Many moons ago.
I also found this wonderful little piece of show history. What can I say? I'm a sucker for nostalgia. Probably why it does so well in the ratings whenever they drag it out onto Monday Night Raw.
Oof.
All right, so before we get into tonight's episode of Raw itself, I have a couple of quick things for the website that we need to plug. Andrew.
Harry.
Impact Wrestling had a pay-per-view last night.
It did. These are facts. I'm glad you remembered.
Well, according to last week's show, I still thought it was next Sunday, so what the fuck do I know?
Exactly.
However, if you want to find out how Impact Wrestling did with their most recent report, with their most recent pay-per-view, Andrew has a report up for it. And where can people find that, Andrew?
Oh, at that lovely website, thechairshot.com.
In addition, if you want to find out how we got to Rebellion last night, my review of United We Stand is up on thechairshot.com as well. Now that all of the frivolities are out of the way, what do you say we get into tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw?
That is kind of a gimmick, isn't it?
Did they actually say where Raw was at tonight? I don't recall hearing them say.
Something about fried chicken.
I mean, Sami Zayn ran it down at, like, Kentucky something. Lexington? Bumblefuck? I don't know.
Rupp Arena, so they were in wherever the University of Kentucky is, because I think I remember them saying Rupp Arena now.
I don't know. My relatives aren't interrelated, so I don't really know Kentucky that well. I'm sorry.
You know you're a special class of trash when people from New Jersey look at you and go, ew.
Exactly, Ohio.
Hey, you watch yourself, sucker. All right, so we open the show with Alexa Bliss and a in-ring moment of Bliss. No set, nothing like that. Alexa announces the four Raw participants in the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. Those four participants will be Braun Strowman, last year's winner, which shows that they've done fuck all with that, Drew McIntyre, Ricochet, and Baron Corbin. Tony, of those four, who would you say would be your preliminary favorite to win Money in the Bank from the Raw brand?
None of them.
Well, unfortunately, that's not an acceptable answer.
Actually, it is, because this is our show, and I feel that nobody really needs the briefcase. So my answer is none of them.
Very well. Andrew, do you have a preference for these four?
I mean, I'll play by your rules and go out of these four. You know, I'll pick Drew because, of course, I'm going to pick Drew. But, yeah, I don't care about any of them. None of them actually deserve some kind of title reign, title shot, except kind of Drew. But then they have him just pissing off into random, like, upper mid-card, lower main event things. So, whatever. You know if McIntyre is an available answer, I will pick him.
Fair enough. This breaks down into your traditional in-ring open with all four of these gentlemen bickering back and forth and leads to the Teddy Long special. It's a tag match.
Playa?
Aw. I was waiting for a playa. As McIntyre teams with Corbin to take on Strowman and Ricochet. Okay, what the fuck interest does Strowman have in teaming with Ricochet? Like,
I guess
so
their position as baby faces, yeah.
Maybe he thought he was Finn.
Or, oh, no, I got the better idea. Cause, no, it's just because he's big and Ricochet does flippy things, so he wants to find different ways to throw him. And I'd be okay if that was a gimmick, to be honest.
So what you're saying is Ricochet is his new Singh brother?
More like just projectile, like rocket launchers all day long.
So like AOP with Roderick Strong in that one War Games match.
Yes, I like that one.
Very well. The tag team match goes 14 minutes, about 11 of which was shown with the commercial break. Strowman and Ricochet pick up the win after McIntyre punches Corbin in the face. Strowman power slams Corbin, and then Ricochet hits a shooting star press for the pinfall. noticeably not using the 630, probably because he's been landing flush on people with it the last couple of weeks. Tony, what did you think of our opening tag team match?
I mean, it was predictable. It was Corbin in a match. It was bleh. There's really no reason for Braun to be teaming with Ricochet. It was there. I wasn't, you know, bothered by it. It was a result of a shitty and cliche opening segment in which everyone talked over everyone, including Drew, our you know, Raw Reaction favorite. Yeah, it was par for the course, really, for the entire episode, where nothing really happened.
Andrew?
The only good thing that came from this match was the fact that, I guess you could say, Drew remembered something from last week, even though he referenced it in the promo leading up to that. So I guess he remembered something from 15 minutes before the match happened, so he kind of screwed Corbin and walked away. That was cute, I guess, as a wrestling storyline wrinkle, whatever you want to call it, but who cares? Like, I was so disinterested. I think I was playing on my phone most of this match because literally nothing happened. They all kind of got their normal shit in, and it was uninteresting.
Is there a particular person on SmackDown that you would rather see having the Money in the Bank contract, Tony?
Can you ask that one more time?
Is there a particular person on SmackDown other than the four men announced from Raw that you would prefer to see in the contest in winning the Money in the Bank contract?
Oh, okay. Off the top of my head, not really. I was really looking forward to Cesaro being in the match. I think that a person like him in the position that he's in is what the Money in the Bank should be used for. We talked about Drew being the, you know, number one person. Drew McIntyre is one of those characters that doesn't need the briefcase. And I've talked about this before over the last 5 years, where this is one of those tools that the WWE has created that could easily create a year-long story if they wanted to, or something incredibly impactful in a small amount of time, and yet they just don't really know how to. They do the same thing with titles, with King of the Ring championships, with the Andre the Giant battle, whatever, the Ovary Battle Royal Championship. All of these things are tools that they could be using to build someone or to create something intriguing, and I just, you know, this year, I see it, and I think to myself, yep, it's going to be another year where it just doesn't really matter, you know? And it's their own. I mean, look at last year. Who won last year and what did they do with it? You know, it just, I don't know if I could pick a person, but if I did, and if I were writing the show, I think Cesaro would be the one that stands out, mainly because it's just like, if not now, then when? He's believable visually. He's got the look. His wrestling acumen is amazing. I mean, just watch any of his matches that last longer than 10 minutes and you'll be impressed. So it's just one of those things. Like if we were in the writer's room and we said to ourselves, hey, we got a Money in the Bank match coming up, who should we throw this on? Let's create a new star. Let's create someone different. Unfortunately, we have the same people we've been seeing over the past few months, and they're not entertaining. Drew is, but Drew even was a rare misstep tonight where he just kept cutting everybody off. And it didn't come off as natural. It came off as awkward.
I think that was kind of the problem with that opening segment in general, is they had so much stuff they tried to pack in into the 13, into like the 10 to 11 minutes that it was given before they went to the first commercial break. We usually complain about the length of the opening segment on the show, and for good reason, because usually we're talking 15, 20 minutes just to get to any actual action here. But when it comes to an important announcement, such as the Money in the Bank participants, they seemingly rush their way clean through it. Andrew, I'll ask you the same question I asked Tony here. Is there somebody from SmackDown that you would like to see specifically holding the briefcase?
Oh, sí, el ídolo. Come on. And Andrade would be wonderful with the Money in the Bank. And he's actually one that could use it, even though he may get thrown into an Intercontinental Championship match with Finn, depending on where they go with it. But I'd definitely prefer Andrade over anyone. So there's that. And Yeah, I agree with Tony that the opening segment didn't do the opening match any favors because it was just a lot of stepping over each other. It's like when we have a bad connection here on the reaction and we just, you know, we're all behind by a couple seconds so we don't let the other one talk and just keep cutting each other off like a bunch of fucking assholes. And that's all they looked like. They all looked like just fucking blithering assholes. And Ricochet tried to get in a little dig, but he has the conviction of a two-year-old. Like, I don't really know. Like, there is no presence that he has. He cannot deliver any kind of, like, barb or jab convincingly because he's just got that smiley baby face, I'm happy to be here kind of look. And he needs to fucking figure that out.
Do you guys think that, last question that I'll ask about this opening segment and this opening match, and then we'll move on. Do you guys think that the leaked Money in the Bank promo that we all saw on, that we would have seen online, that had Cesaro, McIntyre, Rey Mysterio, Ricochet, Aleister, Andrade, and I forget who, Lars Sullivan, as the participants in Money in the Bank, do you think that that set us up for disappointment with this opening segment when we didn't get names such as Cesaro and Rey Mysterio enough for this match? Andrew?
No, because since when do we actually believe stupid fucking leaked pictures? Like, it's so easy to just Photoshop that, make up your own information. Like, people put way too much stock into it's online, it has to be real. Like, it's bullshit. I didn't get my hopes up. I think it's just a combination of so far what's been announced on Raw. We already know I don't like Braun. I'm over his character. Baron, even though, yeah, his character, he's kind of doing his shtick where he wants to be hated and that whole X-Pac heat, tangible heat, you know, whatever the fuck you want to call it, that's kind of his shtick and he's going for it. And we've all agreed that Ricochet is an awesome athlete, great wrestler, but has no personality, so there's nothing really to latch onto. And this didn't do him any favors. So it's starting off bad, starting off slow, whatever nice way you want to put it. But, I mean, we've seen most of these guys in ladder matches or Money in the Bank matches, and it should be entertaining. I just don't give a fuck about the participants, except for Drew.
Tony, did you see the picture in question? And if so, did that kind of set you up with the expectation that Cesaro was going to be in this match?
No, I did see the picture. I considered Cesaro as a possibility before that. More so to the rumors about him, you know, getting a push, which I didn't believe because it didn't make sense, but did secretly hope for it because I just felt like he'd be a good hand to push again. If not now, then when? But no, seeing an image like that, it never. I mean, there was one with Sasha on it too, and obviously she's not there for whatever reason. So no, I didn't. I don't put much into. I mean, you know me, Harry. I still to this day not even sure that half the stuff that they say about Vince McMahon is true because where's the source? You know, I don't like following stuff like that, and this is just another instance of that.
Very well, let's move on. The Usos have their in-ring debut on Raw as a tag team as they take on, also moving over because apparently the superstar shakeup has shooken up 2 weeks into the future when Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows come back over to Monday Night Raw as well. Tony pointed out something in the Raw report available where at, Tony?
411mania.com.
Or you could also check out Stephen Mitchell's takeover at thechairshot.com. Equal opportunity, Andrew.
Nice, nice.
Where he said that Michael Cole commented something along the lines of both of these teams looking to get their career started here on Monday Night Raw. I understand where you were coming from, Tony, but I think what Cole meant there was he was looking for both teams are looking to get their careers back on track now that they're back on Raw.
Even that's a stupid statement.
In the Usos' instance, I will agree with that, but for Anderson and Gallows, hopefully this could be the start of something where they're not just sitting at catering every Tuesday night for SmackDown. Now they'll sit at catering every Monday night for Raw until their contract expires, allegedly. Anyway, the match goes 11 minutes and 20 seconds, about 8 of which was shown with the commercial break. the Good Brothers look for the magic killer late in the match, but Jimmy makes the save, a trio of super kicks, as I've said before, the Samoan Young Bucks, and the top rope splash by Jimmy on Anderson spell curtains for Gallows and Anderson to give the Usos a victory. We'll keep the post-match with the Usos and the Revival separate for now. Let's focus specifically on the match. Andrew, what did you think?
No, Anderson does windows, not curtains, Harry. That's not how that works. Yeah. But anyway, and wait, this wasn't the Usos' in-ring debut, because didn't they beat Glorious Duo on the Shake-Up week? Harry?
Oh, yeah, when it was given away by, when it was given away by the graphic guy. You're right, my mistake.
That's fine. Just want to make sure we're delivering factual information, even if it's close enough. I get what you meant. But, again, this match did fuck all. Like, we haven't seen the big LG and Anderson in a long time, and they were kind of a joke the last time we saw them, or they just kind of filled in thinking they could beat the Bludgeon Brothers. Was that, like, the last time we really saw them when the Bludgeon Brothers were a thing, or the Survivor Series kind of time when they actually had a story, and then now they've been in limbo for like a couple months? Like, what the fuck? Like, I don't actually give a shit. That was the biggest problem, I think, with this entire show. Like, it just felt like it did nothing, and this obviously didn't help that.
Tony, your thoughts?
A week ago, I expressed in the comment section of my Raw report that the Usos have that charisma that is somewhat unfounded in a majority of the wrestlers today, where when they were joking with the Revival last week, it came off a lot more naturally and more relatable to me personally, because I know people that speak like that, that talk like that. It does get a little, you know, cutesy when they start rhyming with each other, but it's still like it's a call and response between brothers, so it kind of makes sense in that aspect. I also said that they, now that they're on Raw, in the Raw report, that they could flourish, they could become something a little bit bigger than what they are, and they're already a big deal. And then, of course, this week we get like an amplification of everything that I said, to the point where it was annoying. There is absolutely no reason for them to have microphones and chanting their entrance while walking down the ramp. It just comes off weird and tacky. Now, I get it. Maybe they're trying to sell some T-shirts and they're trying to get the crowd more interactive, so I understand it. It just comes off as annoying. And again, just a little bit too much. Okay, so we'll wait for what happens after the match. The commentary team was trying their best to give a little bit of clout to Gallows and Anderson, but it's not going to work like that. It will never work like that. I don't get why they don't understand that. If you don't see people on a consistent basis doing consistently well, you won't think that they are good at what they do. And one match, no matter how long or short it is, unless it's incredibly impressive, will not change your mind when the commentary team is trying to purposefully change your mind. Because we're not dumb. We get it. If I were to tell someone to listen to our podcast and harp over and over on how great Harry is and how he's really, really good and how he's this and that, how he's feeding, you know, them questions, the right ones, and he keeps the flow and blah, 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 the person that I'm telling this to is going to hate Harry because I'm pissing him off, because we get it. Okay, let us see. Let us see the proof. Let us understand that these guys are good at what they do. I don't know where their lessons are coming from. I don't know what class Michael Cole holds to say that this is what you need to do to build a wrestler. That comes with time, consistency, character development, and actually intriguing storylines. You know, I mean, I'll give you this. One of the Uso brothers, after their match, said that was something along the lines of that was good showing. You know, that was I want to give a shout out to the good Usos, which is the Good Brothers. Him saying that one statement did more for me than the entirety of the commentary team during the entirety of the match. And you know why? Because it felt real. because it meant something and it carried something. It carried emotion. Everything that Cole and Corey Graves was saying and every sound that Renee Young tried to make didn't build them up for anything. The match itself, you know, it was cool.
All right, before we move on to the aftermatch effects, Tony, you know how we opened with Fat Ass Facts?
Yep.
Let's step into the Cajun corner.
Hell yeah.
What's going on, Rick?
What's up, guys?
What up, Ho?
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thanks, Boo.
We miss you around these parts, Rick. How's life treating you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Look, I got one thing to say. I called in as a favor to Harry, but I have not been watching Monday Night Raw on Monday nights. So if y'all spoil Raw for me, I spoil Endgame. There, that's a deal.
Well, if you haven't seen End Game of Thrones by now, you're kind of shit out of luck. All right, so I know you don't get to watch Raw live on a weekly basis anymore because of your family commitments, but however, you are still running the Fantasy Wrestling League over on Facebook, and if people are interested in getting your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown, they can do so over on the FWO page, right, Rick?
That is correct. I'm doing a little recap show of my own of both Raw and SmackDown on Friday's afternoon. You can watch me dancing to Sami Zayn's theme song and giving my thoughts.
I looked to see if I could find his theme song to put in our queue for today, and I couldn't. As far
just
as you looking for a name?
Pictures Seth Rogen in a hat. Like Sami Zayn dancing with a group of children behind him, all with beautiful hair, which Rick does not have.
No,
and you'll get the picture.
In addition, Fantasy Wrestling League will start back up right around SummerSlam as well. If you guys are interested in joining that, I will be sure to give you guys more information as we get closer and closer to SummerSlam to do so. Rick, thanks for stopping on tonight, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Love you,
man.
Bye.
The nostalgia is running deep tonight, Tony. What can I say?
Yeah, way to have our old roommates walk into the room while our new roommate is here and make them feel like shit. Jeez.
What
okay,
if the new roommate told you that I knew about it and I'm totally okay with this happening?
I know. I just like making you feel more special than you are.
Oh, you're so nice.
Let's get back to Raw and the Revival shaves their back. What the fuck? No wonder these guys are wanting to leave.
This whole
Tony,
fucking out, what it was like 30 to 45 minutes, this whole 30 to 45 minute block of Raw was,
I will read verbatim from Larry's review here. Post-match, they run down the Revival and show footage of them shaving each other's back. Vince McMahon humor, everyone. He's not wrong there. This is the kind of stuff that we know Vince appreciates.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm upset. Okay, so, look, let's set the stage here. Before the Usos have a match, we're told by commentary that they have an incredibly special announcement to make after their match, something that is very important and worth knowing. They hype it up. They want to know what's going down. After the match, the Usos get the mic. They applaud the Good Brothers for their showing. And they get to the more important stuff. And we get a handheld video of the Usos creeping on the Revival, who are in what looks to be a locker room slash shower area with towels on. And Dash Wilder is shaving the back of Scott Dawson. Now, one could, in 2019... talk about the toxic masculinity involved in this situation,
one could look at this as belittling of something as simple as male brotherhood, especially coming from two guys who actually are brothers. One could amplify the reality that this is kind of insulting to any person of any sexual nature. We're not going to do that here. What we're going to do is just say, why did we need this? Why did we need this for a feud that is seemingly based on wrestling acumen and how good it is and how good of a competitor these two teams are? Why did we need yet another pissing in a teapot to move this story forward? This did not do anything. It didn't add to anything. In fact, it may have taken away from the Revival, who, I mean, at the very least, they're playing along. And it makes me really, really wonder, like, how mad are they? Are they mad at all? Or are they just, like, biting their tongue until their contract wears out? Because if you're looking at it from the point of view that we've been looking at it, these guys have, quote-unquote, every right to be upset due to the way that they're booked, how they lose, what they do, what they don't do, blah, 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 blah. And then you see something like tonight, and you're like, why haven't they quit? I'm not saying they should. I'm simply saying if we're to believe everything that we've heard, something like this is real easy to be like, no, I'm not doing that. To his credit, Dawson's reply as to why he had his friend shave his back was kind of funny. But the reality is, this is not, in my opinion, in the Usos' character. You know, that funny word that I like to use a lot. I don't recall the Usos being like this, you know, spying on their peeps and putting it out there for the world to see so that they can scream, got him, in the microphone 5 times. I don't know. It just didn't come off as very Uso-ish. It didn't come off as, like, it just was weird. But, yeah, it, let alone the McMahon humor that you want to label it, it was just stupid.
Honestly, this came off as something more like the old school antics of Edge and Christian, but not in a good way. Andrew, what were your thoughts on this here?
I mean, I thought it was moronic, but it's kind of in the Uso vein, and I say that only by looking at it from the fact that Usos definitely reference memes and pop culture, and they like to basically make people they don't like look like jackasses. So this is the direction they decided to go, that shaving someone's back is apparently funny. And we all know Gadim is a meme. So, I mean, yeah, I'm grasping at straws a little bit, but it's close enough to their character. The problem really turns into, we've seen the Usos be super respect-driven, kind of like baby faces for a while, between the New Day thing towards the end of their SmackDown run where they forfeited a match just so that, you know, New Day got through the gauntlet a little further. And, you know, even the way they started off with, I respect, you know, the good brothers, the good Usos, whatever the fuck they called them. And even last week, they started off mentioning tag teams that they respected and would like to wrestle. And then it turned into, oh, and then the Revival walked up to him, and then suddenly it's like, oh, but we don't like you. You guys are dicks. So it's perfectly within their character. It just seems awkward because we haven't seen the Usos be dicks in a while. Again, the humor I don't really care for because there's nothing funny. Like, some guys have hairy backs. It's nice that he has a buddy that'll shave his back. I mean, some people have their wives or their significant others, whatever you want to call it, do it. It's not like it's unheard of. So I don't understand what's funny about it.
I feel like somewhere down at the Performance Center, Albert's hoping he could find somebody to shave his back for him.
Exact back and front and God knows where else, because that motherfucker is hairy. And not you.
No, definitely not me.
I'm just saying.
To further your respect point as well, look at how they lost the SmackDown tag team titles to the Hardy Boys and the sign of respects that were shown after that match as well.
Correct. But, yeah, so I think it's just what do the kids say? It's a weird flex. Is that correct, Tony?
Yes, it is. Weird flex, but okay.
Thank you.
What's funny, you know the Gotham kid, that ugly black dude?
Yes.
He is actually from Long Beach, and he is he frequented the bar that I used to work at quite a lot. He was a dick.
No way, really? The Gotham these nuts kid is a dick?
Shocker.
He was a dick.
This is my shocked voice.
This weird, like, perverted. He's just weird. He's just weird.
Thank you for recounting that story, Tony. I feel enriched by it.
You're welcome.
Got him. All right, moving on.
Got
Ms. TV is up. Ms. TV is up next with Bobby Lashley as the guest, and apparently Lashley is speaking in third person these days. Why? Who the fuck knows? It eventually leads to Miz and Lashley bickering about their respective accomplishments thus far. Lashley takes a shot at Miz about the fact that Shane beat up Miz's dad. Lashley starts to say something about Miz's kid, and that leads to Miz attacking Lashley. We come back, and it turns into a singles match where Shane McMahon gets involved, causing a distraction leading to a Lashley spear pinfall victory at 2 minutes and 40 seconds when we come back from the commercial break. Post-match, Shane and Lashley deliver a double-team beatdown. Miz ends up getting locked in Shane McMahon's choke again. And then later on in the show, we see Miz challenge Shane to a cage match at Money in the Bank, which via Twitter, Shane accepts. Let's do Miz TV in the match first, and then we'll talk about the cage match afterward. Tony, what did you think of Miz TV?
Oh, my God. What the fuck? Okay, so Lashley thinks he's The Rock now, and he does a really shitty job at it. I don't know. This could have been okay. You know, like the little back and forth that they had kind of worked out, I guess. But it just Lashley just came off as dumb. You don't compare yourself to The Miz. What is that, like, in what world is that a smart thing to do? I don't get it. I don't know. It just didn't come off as, you know, I didn't like it. And then you have this idea of Shane. So Shane and The Miz having a steel cage match, sure, let's extend a feud that nobody really wanted to see happen anyway, but also it produced a good match, and you know, it's not offensive. I'm cool with it. I mean, one could argue about the blurring of the lines of this brand division that they had made such a big deal about, considering it was a superstar shakeup. But if we're looking at Shane McMahon, he's a McMahon. He could show up at any show he wants to. So, sure, why the fuck not? But Lashley, like, just, like, bringing up his father randomly, and I don't know. It just seemed like, it seems shoehorned in there just to get to the Shane thing, which kind of makes Lashley look like an idiot.
Well, Lashley doing his own talking for him due to the lack of Leo Rush. I assume that makes Andrew happy that there's no Leo Rush. However, Andrew, that means you have to listen to Bobby Lashley speak. I'm not sure that's a fair compromise.
If this was Impact Bobby Lashley, listening to him speak wasn't painful. But WWE Bobby Lashley, different animal altogether. Yeah, none of this was actually good. Like, even Miz wasn't very good on Miz TV comparatively. He was bailed out by the crowd really liking him and buying into every little dumb thing he said, and he even kind of shut up and let the crowd take over at some point. So, yeah, it was a clunky segment, and then the match was literally just a plot device to get to Shane coming out and them having what I'm hoping is a blow-off match in a steel cage, because steel cage is usually a good blow-off match. Granted, Falls Count Anywhere is also usually a blow-off match because gimmick equals blow-off, but I guess we'll see where this goes. I like Badass Miz a little bit. The crowds seem to like him. The IWC seems to like him. So new babyface Miz is much better than original run with the babyface attempt. So it's not like I'm sour on The Miz, but yeah, nothing was good about this entire thing. Like, shit, like, we're through, what, the first, like, hour and a half of the show, and even people we like that are usually good suck tonight. Like, what the fuck?
I'm just thinking it was an off night in general, though, because top to bottom, there wasn't anything particularly standout-ish about the show. We'll continue going through here in a few seconds. Real quick, back to the cage match. So who takes the bigger bump in the cage match, Miz or Shane? Andrew?
Shane.
Tony?
Shane. It's always Shane.
Oh, did you mean a cocaine?
I'm going to say Miz. I'm going to say Miz here, and the reason I'm going to say Miz here is because we saw it come back and bite Miz in the ass at WrestleMania of him trying to play Shane's game and it costing him the match. I think that his emotions are going to get the better of him, and he's going to try to do the same thing here in the cage match, and then this time it's going to work out for him, and then he'll once and for all put the whole Shane thing to bed. Either way, like Tony said, the WrestleMania Falls Count Anywhere match was surprisingly adequate. I believe would be the nicest way to put it. So, given
them another stipulation, I thought it was a little better than that.
Giving them another stipulation with which to focus in, even though cage matches aren't necessarily always the most exciting match in the WWE, it at least allows them to focus their rage inside of a match where they have something gimmicky around them to work with. So I'm looking forward
to
it.
You wanted to say rage in a cage. You can. Go for it.
Fun fact, that was actually the name of the cage playset for action figures for the WWF.
There we go.
Rage Cage is a drinking game that I play a lot.
Yes, but despite all your rage, are you still just a rat in a cage?
I'm a bat in a cage.
I love bat in a cage. I like it.
Somewhere. Billy Corgan weeps.
I mean, we know where. It's in the NWA. They had the Crockett Cup over the weekend, too. It wasn't just Impact's Rebellion. So we know where Billy Corgan is. You stop it.
Did you watch the Crockett Cup?
I did. Come on, this is me.
I caught bits and pieces with the Briscoes cutting a really sweary promo, but I can't say that I was interested in the full show. Any show with which Bram wrestles three times does not interest me.
Yeah, that wasn't the interesting part. I was more curious, like, the Rock and Roll Express being in their 60s, I was curious if that was going to go. That wasn't a bad match. PCO still doing it at his, like, over 50-year-old age was pretty entertaining. Allison Kay and Santana Garrett was surprisingly good. Willie Mack and Colt Cabana was pretty solid. And Allison Skrull put on a fucking hell of a match, so... It was a good show, top to bottom. A couple clunkers here and there, but nothing egregious.
Did you review it or just watch it?
I just watched it. I didn't have enough time to actually review it.
Okay. I'm actually planning on getting to the full show eventually because you did mention a show that does have a match on that show that does have my interest. We've talked about this before. I'm a big fan of the AK-47, and Santana Garrett has impressed me from what I've seen of her, so I am kind of curious as to how that match went.
That's a good, because I think they even dragged out Medusa for the little bit of pomp and circumstance, and she was also kind of championing the team that won the Battle Royal to get into the last spot of the Crockett Cup. So Medusa might be a bigger player in NWA too now.
So we talk about the show as it happens. I don't think that'll surprise anybody listening. Like, we go back and forth about some of the things that we kind of want to touch on, some of the things that stood out to us and stuff. From my text messages with Andrew, hypothetical, if a Lucha House Party gets squashed, does it positively or negatively affect one's rating? Because while they do appear, they're getting smushed. Your response, Andrew, do you remember specifically what it was?
I think it was something along the lines of negative because they still have a match on the show and got in a modicum of offense.
As the Lucha House Party gets the match that got canceled last week, taking on the Viking Raiders, Eric and Ivar, Rowan Hansen, for those of you playing along, drink! End up picking up the win as the Viking Experience, because you know Vince had to keep that name somewhere, the former pop-up Power Slam known as Thor's Hammer in Ring of Honor, gets the win for the Vikings in about a minute and a half once the bell rang. A pre-match attack by the Lucha House Party, I do believe, predicates the offense that Andrew was referring to. However, once the bell rang, it was more or less all Raiders. We know Andrew's bias against the Lucha House Party on the show. Tony, what did you think of this particular match?
I mean, you know, the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland are impressive. It just, you know, today we saw a little glimpse of it, but it was against people that no one care about. So, and some would argue that they actually would rather that they lose, such as proven by Andrew here. It's similar to the match with Gallows and Anderson, where you're not really doing anything by putting people in matches that no one really cares about, and no one really cares about them because you in some way, shape, or form have damaged or left out to dry or ignored throughout a majority of their career. And I mean that to Luke, to Gallows and Anderson as much as I mean it to, you know, Lucha House Party. I mean, that gimmick is just dead in the water. If you give it exposure in some way, you're being racist, okay? I'm not offended. It's just blatant. It's there, okay? If you don't expose them, then you get what happens tonight where they get beat and you don't really care. I mean, that springboard back elbow, that was pretty badass. Or not back elbow, but the fact that he could do that is what people really enjoyed in NXT. You do something like that, great. But what was the last match they had? Was against Ricochet and Aleister Black, right?
Actually, I think last week on NXT TV, they defended the tag titles against the Street Profits.
That is correct, Henry.
Well, okay, yeah, I don't watch it. That's my fault for not knowing. But even that, the assumption is, on my part, that there is a reason for them to be fighting and that people know who their opponents are and there's an emotional investment in that match. Whereas we see this, like, we don't know why they're fighting them to begin with. We don't know why they're fighting Lucha House Party. We don't know why Lucha House Party cares to fight these guys. Other than, oh, here's a match, and you guys are little and they're big. That's it. And then that's that distinct difference between NXT and WWE, where NXT, even with me just watching TakeOver and a handful of episodes, it feels like everything matters. This match happening between these two people matter. Because either they want titles, they want to prove that they're better, they want to stand up to something, they want to stand up for something. Everything matters. On Raw, what really mattered here? What mattered between the Usos and the Good Brothers? What mattered between the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland and Lucha House Party? I mean, I don't know. Nothing. Nothing mattered. So why would we care to watch it?
Andrew, do you have anything to chime in with this match beyond with the conversation that we had via text?
Really, only two things. One is a question to Tony. If the Raiders do finally move over to Vegas, are you changing their names, or are they going to always be the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland?
I think what we'll call them is the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland, of Vegas, formerly of Oakland.
Oh, okay, that's fair. I just wanted to know how you were planning on changing that, depending. And
could you call them the Raiders of Oak Vegas?
No, that's just stupid.
Anyway, so yeah,
five
and
years
the only
of this
comment,
shit, people.
The only comment I have is that the logic behind the match, though I hate the house party, the only real logic was that it was set up for one of those kind of debut squashy match type things, and the Raiders just beat the shit out of them beforehand anyway, so the house party took offense, which you see in NXT. Sometimes the lower card guys will just get smashed or they'll get jumped ahead of time and not really get a moment to shine, so then it's revenge the next week. So the reason it happened this week was fine. But the reason why they paired up, that's the gap. That's the disconnect. Like, we don't know why they were initially paired up aside from a possible squash. But at least this week it was like, hey, the Raiders embarrassed them. They wanted to try to get revenge, and they can't. Okay.
It's just really nice to see the Minnesota Viking Raiders of Oakland beat the Browns.
You're going to have to change that from Browns to Giants. So did you watch the draft at all? The Giants or the Browns now?
I meant Browns because they're Mexican, silly.
Whoa. Okay, well, it's okay for you to say it. Fine.
Tony?
That's not cool.
I think it's hilarious. Hey, so what's up, man? Are the Browns going to the Super Bowl? Because that's what I'm hearing by two people.
I think they got a good shot for the playoffs. Harry, they're a local team to you. How do you feel, even though I don't think you love the Browns? So how do you feel?
Well, I'm a Bills fan, so obviously the self-abuse cap started way before I started doing the show with Tony.
Yeah.
There's a lot of excitement around here for Cleveland this year, especially now that the Odell Beckham Jr. trade has gone final, and they also signed another running back as well during this offseason in order to help spell Nick Chubb in the backfield.
Yeah, I'm hearing legit. I have two Browns fans that come into the bar frequently, and they were just hyped as shit at Odell, and like they're ready. They're like, oh yeah, oh, save our seats for the Super Bowl, man. I'm like, I'm not saving your seats, Dick.
Super Bowl is a bit much to ask. Playoffs, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
they are still
energy,
in the same conference as New England.
Yeah, you got to shoot high. I understand it, and it's just nice to know that the Cleveland Browns fans are actually legitimately hyped for a season for a change, instead of just hyped for the number one draft pick. So, it's a different year, man. It's a different year.
Well, Andrew, that would be something you'd have experience up there in Giants country.
Good thing I'm not a Giants fan. I get to make fun of them as much as I want.
Fuck you. All right, let's move on. We have a second Alexa Bliss's Moment of Bliss segment as she announces the women's participants in the Money in the Bank ladder match. They are Natalya, which I'm not surprised by.
Yeah.
Naomi, I'm not surprised by. Mm. Alexa herself, who I'm not surprised by, although hopefully with Alexa, it's going to be a case of her protecting herself as much as possible with everything that she's dealt with injury-wise lately. And apparently the Raw Women's Division is so depleted that Dana Brooke qualifies for a Money in the Bank ladder match opportunity. Holy shit.
Wah, wah.
Andrew, come back, Sasha.
Andrew, Dana Brooke in the Money in the Bank ladder match. On a scale of 1 to Matthew, how excited are you for that?
Wait, you said Dana Brooke, not Sasha. No one's going to trip through the ropes or fall off a ladder. So she's just going to look inept in the ring. She hasn't, like, you know, broken her neck during a fucking dive or anything like that, though. So it's just going to be an ugly match. But it could be covered by lots of weapons. So, I mean, good for her. They're trying to build her up, give her this little bit of a redemption angle. I don't know. I don't like it, but hey. You know what? Since I agreed with Tony's point before about, you know, not just throwing established people in there that don't really need it, it would be pretty hypocritical of us to shit on Dana Brooke because she does need it to legitimize herself to a degree. And they've done well with the women's Money in the Bank between Carmella kind of just being irritating and not serious, and then she won the first two, technically. And then Alexa won the last one and ruined Ronda's first title shot by just beating the shit out of Nia with the briefcase and, you know, dumping Ronda out and then stealing the title. So they do pretty decent with the women's. So I'm not going to shit on it just yet.
Tony, what do you take out of these four women being announced for Money in the Bank?
I mean, the whole segment was weird, just like oddly set up. You got two chairs, but you're announcing four women. Dana Brooke said opportunities like 37 times. Natalya, thank you so much for informing me that when someone starts a sentence with no offense, they totally mean to offend. Because prior to this moment, I did not know that. Wow. Yeah, every girl that got the microphone said something, only for Alexa to be like, shut up, why are you talking? Well, then why do they have microphones? What? You just saw this happen with the dudes. Why are you going to allow it to happen again? I love her shitting on their parade, basically being like, yeah, you know, it's me, bitch. But other than that, it just didn't go well. And again, this kind of takes me back to last week when I said, if I'm being announced for something, like I'm already in the match, there's really not a big reason for me to say that I'm going to win said match. Because me saying that to Natalya doesn't really give me an edge. I'm just going to go and do it. And I'm not saying that every character should be like that, but we don't have one person like that because they're so stuck in their ways of this fucking churning out of people for promos to say the same thing. Every single person, guy or girl tonight, sounded catty. You don't want that coming from the dudes. And I'm sorry, but I've never wanted that from the women. I just want some ass kicking. I just want a legit, like, you know, I'm going to beat your ass. I'm going to take the belt. I'm going to take the briefcase. I don't need to talk about it. Why are we talking about this? But instead, what we got tonight from both genders was this cattiness that is just, ugh.
I will say that Alexa's comment to them that you're worse than the guys did make me chuckle during the course of this segment. We go into the Firefly Funhouse. Tony, week two, your thoughts?
This one wasn't nearly as strong as last week's. We're going to have to give it a couple more weeks before it matters. The witch, what is it, Abby? That's not a really strong character, and it's kind of noticeably Bray Wyatt. I like it because it makes it seem like he's so fucked in the head that he's all of these characters. But then you get into the idea of, is this in his mind? Is this a real talk show? And I don't think the WWE is good enough to handle that type of levity for stories. The end result is what happens when he faces somebody else, and that's kind of what I'm waiting for. I'm not going to sign off on this as failed, because I think Bray Wyatt deserves better than that. But this week was kind of a dip in quality of performance, I guess you could say. And is that Rabbit, like, a former rapper, or is he just down with the Usos?
I think he said Rambling Rabbit, not Rapping Rabbit.
No, I know he said Rambling Rabbit. It doesn't change the vernacular that he was using, as if he was some former hip-hop legacy going to die, you know.
The one thing that I did like about this segment, and then, Andrew, I'll get your thoughts here, is I like the fact that they kind of had a callback to the original Bray with the painting being of the burning house. Andrew, what were your thoughts on this Firefly Funhouse?
A little bit of everything both of you said, because I agree that it didn't come off as strong, but it was... We finally got to see the rabbit that some people complained about or speculated about last week when we saw it in the opening, but we didn't see it in the show. And it's got that kind of little Donnie Darko kind of feel to it, so that's kind of neat. I like the fact that Abby got pissed off as soon as he revealed the picture of the burning house, because that was supposed to hold her soul or yet whatever that was when Randy Orton burned it down. So that was apropos. And the fact that it was obviously more dark and sinister from the way they were acting, and then going to the word of the day being sociopath, like, it was, there was still enough cute things within it to really keep it going and to not make it fall flat to me. Yes, it was weaker than the first one, because I think the first one also benefits from the fact that it was the shock of just not knowing what the fuck to expect. And the second one, you know, the sophomore slump kind of concept where we are now going to have our own concepts of what we're expecting because we saw the first one and then it's going to hit it or it's not. But I think it was perfectly fine. I think Rebby Hardy posted a little video of Maxwell saying the word of the day because she has, and he goes, sociopath. So it's nice that they already kind of have people within the universe playing along, and a little, like a 3-year-old child or however fucking old Maxwell is. So it's cute. It's fine. I think that was the highlight of the show for me, because that's how little I think of the show. But yeah, I'm still behind Firefly Funhouse. I still think it's pretty good.
Alexa Bliss takes on Naomi coming back from the Firefly Funhouse. And Tony, we were a pair of socks away from never seeing AJ Awesome in the 411 Raw thread ever again.
Oh, that boy was feeling it.
The match itself sees Alexa having a series of shoe-related wardrobe malfunctions, the last of which leads to her arguing with the referee that she needs to put her shoes back on and turning into the rear view. A split-legged moonsault by Naomi is the pinfall mere moments later at approximately 4 minutes. It just seemed unnecessary that you would have Alexa return to in-ring competition in a throwaway match here on Raw after having announced that she'll be back in the ring at Money in the Bank. I don't understand why this couldn't have been somebody like a Dana Brooke in this spot taking on Naomi or even Natalya to an extent. I don't know why Alexa had to specifically be in this contest and take the loss here when you're just now re-engaging her into the women's division as an active competitor in addition to doing the Moment of Bliss segments. Andrew, what did you think of Alexa and Naomi?
I mean, I think it made perfect sense because you give the bratty heel that people love to hate the perfect out where she was goaded into the match and she was wearing borrowed shoes and she wasn't in her ring gear and she was preoccupied through the whole thing because she had to tie her shoe constantly and then her shoes came off. Everybody else would have been a fairly legitimate-ish match that would have hurt someone's credibility. Doing it this way, Alexa's Teflon. Shit, she could have done it straight up and lost, and she's still Teflon because people love to hate her. So this gives her the perfect heel kind of out. Nobody gets hurt. Naomi gets a decent win. And I'm still salty they haven't started calling Naomi's finish the thick-legged moonsault. It's such an easy just transition. Thick-legged would go with it. It's not offensive. It's you know, not objectifying. She's a thick girl. She knows she's a thick girl. And it's a good move.
You're a thick girl. Tony?
Yeah, I agree. Thick-legged moonsault is a really good name.
The match, Tony.
Oh, okay. Eddie did it better. But I don't know, man. It's Alexa. Anything she does is cute. And I couldn't help but keep staring at her tush while she was wrestling. See, that's objectifying and rude. No, I kind of agree with Andrew where you know, I would rather see this than anything Dana would do. I don't like, and this is more of a nitpick of wrestling as a whole than it is just Alexa. I don't like when heels get convinced so easily to have a match that they just said they didn't want to have. I don't know, it always comes off as a bit farcical to me, not too believable. I mean, I'm an asshole, and if I don't want to do something, I'm just not going to do it. Like, and no sense of pride hurting is going to make me change my mind. So I don't know. And that's little, but it's one of those things that happens a lot in wrestling or in WWE, and it's always come off as like, eye roll inducing to me.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Make sure you use the right one, Tony.
Okay.
That voice is Christopher Platt, Andrew's co-host on Pod is War, available here on the Chairshot Radio Network.
Good plug.
Thank you. I thought so. All right. Becky Lynch in the ring to discuss the fact that she's going to defend both the Raw and SmackDown women's titles at Money in the Bank. She eventually tells Charlie to bugger off in not so many words and calls out Lacey Evans after Lacey laid her out not once but twice with the women's right last week. It breaks down into a huge brawl, which the referees and the agents end up separating. Tony, we know your disdain for brawls on this show, but I think this one actually worked because they kept the other members of the division out and they had a legitimate reason to want to be at each other in a straight-up fight. What did you make of this particular pull-apart?
Yeah, it was a good brawl. I don't know what curry favor means in Ireland, but it really sounds like Becky Lynch is calling Lacey Evans a whore. So if she keeps doing that, I'm not, man. All right. Where did that come from? You know, it's interesting to take that particular stance.
You left the show a little early last week, and Andrew and I had this discussion about Becky and Lacey there, and that was one of the insinuations that we got as well, that she was attempting to state that Lacey was using her feminine wiles to influence favor.
Well, yeah. Lacey said it before the Natty match, where she said a lady knows how to curry favor from whatever to get her way or something like that. So,
see, I thought I remembered something like that.
You are correct then, Tony. Becky insinuates that she's a whore, whereas Lacey probably just meant using feminine charms and wiles because it's the old school Southern kind of dignified way of wording things. But yeah, Becky's going to word it her way and frame it her way.
Yeah, well, I am one who fully supports whoredom, so I can't.
No shit.
But.
And if you don't believe
me,
check
out the King of the North, we have the King of the Whores. That's great.
Hell yeah. Yes.
And if you don't believe him, check out the Raw report over on 411mania.com.
Winter's not the only thing coming. Jesus Christ.
Add me on Facebook and you'll see. Were we talking about whores again? Oh, no. The back and forth, the pull apart.
Jesus Christ.
God, I thought it was great. I think, look, I mean, this serves to make me believe is that the numerous weeks that we saw her coming out and doing nothing and then going back did absolutely nothing for her character. Nothing. So what that makes me feel is that you had no idea what the fuck you were doing, so you did something stupid. This goes in the same book as what I used to call the Ryback push, where it was like 30 squash matches because they had no idea what to do with them, and they just ultimately became pointless. Now, yes, I understand, we've had this conversation before, where sometimes those matter. You know, when Braun was doing the same thing, like, you want to show that these guys are big and they can throw people and blah, blah, blah. But after the fourth or fifth person, you're really just being like, this is fucking boring. And this character is boring because he's not any different than anybody else. Lacey, she literally just walked out and then went to the back. You can't even twist that to make it part of her character. You can't even say, like, no woman, no lady would do that. That doesn't make any – it's literally just stupid. So seeing tonight, it's kind of bothersome because tonight was perfect. That was great. That's all you had to do, guys. That's it. You had to just have Becky point out that she's another blonde bimbo that she has to face and have Lacey be like, I'm not just another blonde bimbo. I can knock you the fuck out. And then that's it. That's it.
Yeah, I think it was one of those interesting aspects where they're trying to basically build up the dichotomy of Lacey's character, which, again, the fact that you don't watch NXT that much, she's supposed to be that stereotypical Southern Belle, but with an edge, because she's a former Marine, so she definitely plays up that Marine pinup kind of look and that whole kind of thing, and obviously she's a badass because she's a former Marine, so she can throw a hand. And I think the coming out and just walking and posing and doing her thing and walking back was to kind of – it was a power play. You know, it was just her being, I can do whatever I want. I'll just come out, get my face known, walk back, and pick my spot. That could honestly be exactly what she meant by curry favor. But again, depending on framing, you can make it sound like God knows what. And I thought that was probably the best promo Lacey had tonight, where she started off like she was going to go into this big, long Southern diatribe about how, you know, Irish temper and, you know, whatever the hell. And then she's just like, you know what? But fuck it. And she just charged the ring. And I'm like, all right, that was good. And then the fact that she, what, went back in at some point and flew right into, like, Becky's fist, and it looked more realistic and like a brawl. So it wasn't bad. I like both girls involved, so that could be helping my enjoyment of the situation. But no, I thought it was pretty good.
Andrew's an established Lacey Evans fan on this show. We were having a conversation about this. We were having a conversation about this match last night while we were watching Rebellion, and Tessa Blanchard was on. And Andrew was chiding me about the fact that I'm not giving Lacey proper credit here. I will say this much. I'm more excited about this match now after this segment than I was going into tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. So I would say that it was successful in that regard, Andrew.
There we go. Okay.
Non-title action as the champions Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder take on the Revival, and commentary spends 95% of the fucking match talking about Scott Dawson's back. Oh, and by the way, the tag team champions pick up a non-title win when Zack Ryder pins whoever, I don't even remember who it was, honestly, at 4.5 minutes. Back shaving. Two of the best tag teams in the world, and the feud is about back shaving. We already discussed this ad nauseum at the top of the show. Fuck it, let's move on. Sami Zayn's weekly diatribe against the WWE Universe. Andrew?
It definitely dragged. Like, it was still amusing. You can still see there's enough conviction. But it's starting to lose me because it just seems like it's a lot of it's how Tony describes Bray Wyatt, but without the long-winded, you know, cryptically worded promos. It's just long-winded, somewhat insulting, running people down, but trying to seem aloof and better than people. And unless they introduce somebody as a foil to this whole fucking Sami Zayn experience, yeah, this is going to start to get painful, I think, because the wheels are starting to fall off a little bit.
Tony.
Yeah, when you blur the lines between reality and fiction, you have a responsibility to keep yourself firmly placed in both. And although Sammy, the character, is going on long diatribes of how he despises us and everything, it loses its threading when you kind of sit there and think about it for a minute. And I know we're not supposed to do that, but I'll give him credit for the idea of, like, why would he want to quit? Because, you know, he feels better to tell us how wrong we are than to just quit. But also, so what's your point? You know, like, it's like someone coming to me and saying, and this has happened many times before, like, hey, Tony, you're a fucking dick. And my response is, oh, okay.
And
that's what are we doing about it? You know, like, are you going to remind me on a weekly basis that I'm a dick to hopefully change my ways? Is it, you know, so similar to that, when we see this in our personal psychological entitlement, what are we supposed to say to you, Sammy? Yeah, we're entitled. Okay, so what? what now? And then this leads to the question that I had last week and the week prior to that. Who is going to be our hero, if you will? Who is going to be the one to speak up for us and do what we expect them to do, which is fight? What wrestler, what character can I think of that can go against this particular threading of reality and fiction? I don't think there's anyone on the roster. Someone suggested Bray Wyatt. And, I mean, I guess the only reason why you could say Bray Wyatt is because he's a relatively clean slate where you can possibly make something out of it. But then who do you cheer? You know, like, I don't know. I like where it's going, but it just seems so incomplete. And for him to be able to speak so much about something that is incomplete makes me feel like a lot of it will eventually become just hot air.
two things in regards to what Tony just said there. One, I have a suggestion as to somebody I think would work well as a foil for Sammy once he's done with what he's doing currently. But as soon as Tony said that people come up to him and go, he's a dick, this is just how I imagine Tony responding.
That's what I do!
My suggestion for foil for Sami Zayn is actually the guy who wrestled right after him tonight on Raw, and that's Rey Mysterio Jr., because his entire career has been all about pleasing what the WWE Universe wants, fighting for them, fighting as the little man, the guy that gets to live his dreams, the undersized person that's out in the crowd watching, hoping to one day be able to do this. I feel like Rey could be kind of like WWE Universe incarnate in that regard in a feud with Sami Zayn there. Plus, the matches would be entertaining from my perspective as well. Tony, buy or sell, Rey Mysterio is a potential opponent for Sami.
Man, that's a collection of promos that I don't want to hear.
You're not wrong there, but the matches would be fun at least.
You're wrong, Sami. Because me and my Rasa and my WWE family, that's not how we are. Okay.
Don't forget to mention Dominic.
my behemoth of a son. That's Big Show's son.
It wasn't Benoit, it was Big Show.
that Big Show reference was a shout out to Tony's little brother.
Yeah.
Now we just gotta work in something for Thugster, and I think we're golden tonight.
What is she doing right now?
That it doesn't count. We have to do it more organically than that. Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio in singles non-title action. Rey Mysterio picks up a win with a roll-up out of the Uranagi right by the fucking ropes, which I know it's more of a me thing here, but just whenever a wrestler's pinned that close to the ropes, why don't you just reach your hand out? How difficult is it? That's more of a me thing. Probably setting up Rey and Joe in a U.S. title match at Money in the Bank, where I would not be surprised to see Dominic turn on Rey, especially after having to carry him literally to the backstage. Tony, what did you make of Rey Mysterio Samoa Joe Part 2?
That was a weird pin. I think Rey kind of stuttered a little bit. Not his fault, shit happens, but it just came off as awkward. It's not just the you thing. That was incredibly close to the ropes to the point where it was just like, come on, y'all. And then Joe to be in – like he just kind of laid there and got stacked and then showed, like, shock and awe. And it's like, what? It's those little things where it's hard to pull off because Samoa Joe's so damn big and Rey Mysterio is so damn little, so you're like, well, I didn't believe that at all. I don't know what they're doing with his son. I don't know if I want to know. He's not been proven to me. Who the fuck knows? I don't know. I feel more or less Joe's going to end up, like, I don't know, murdering him or some shit because he's Samoa Joe.
And that's what Samoa Joe do. Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe is gonna kill you. But,
Andrew's
and it's because of that? It's because of that I don't see Mysterio, you know, lining up with Zayn anytime soon? Because he's got the Joe thing, he got his win, which means he's gonna get a title shot, probably at Money in the Bank or whatever. So, the match, who cares? It was a throwaway. No, it was either going to be Joe squashing it or Rey getting a 50-50 win and then the subsequent match, who gives a fuck. And I guess just to tie it back to what we were talking about before, if we're thinking of a foil for Sammy that no one brought up yet, how about Cedric Alexander?
Well, we saw Cedric come out right after the Sammy segment last week, so that was kind of the thought process that we had too once Tony left the show last week. I still think that Rey Mysterio makes more sense. I still think Rey Mysterio makes more sense from a average fan perspective because more fans know who Rey Mysterio is than know who Cedric Alexander is, as evidenced by the response to the 205 Live guys. But Cedric is somebody that if you want to give him credibility on the main roster, pairing him with somebody like Sami Zayn so fans can see what he's capable of, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's more where I was going with give Sami somebody that needs to be established instead of someone that's already established, because Sammy himself is established. So why wouldn't you give him the newer guy? Logically, you know, wrestling logic thinking.
The promos wouldn't be much better either way, because Cedric's not exactly a great talker either. Tony, do you have a preference between Cedric or Ray for Sammy?
I mean, if I had to choose either one, I'd probably choose Cedric.
Fair enough. Our main event segment is the contract signing for the Money in the Bank title match between Seth Rollins and AJ Styles. They go back and forth for a bit, each getting progressively more angry and more yelly. I don't necessarily know that yelly is more higher voiced, I guess. How do I want to put this?
More exclamatory?
Thank
no,
you.
Let him keep
that
crying.
Works.
This is great.
Tony's
I didn't
want to
listen to him struggle for English, damn it. Tony,
more
that's,
yelly.
It's been basic. It's been basically 5 years of Tony making fun of my lack of knowledge of the English language. Nothing's changed, really. Anyway, it breaks down into a brawl when Styles throws the first punch. Rollins ends up getting the advantage and taking Styles out to the floor and then hitting a suicide dive. Coming back in, though, Seth gets caught with a strike from AJ Styles, and the phenomenal forearm puts Seth Rollins through the contract signing table, because that never happens in contract signings, as Styles stands tall to close this episode of Raw with the Universal title on the mat next to Seth Rollins, but Styles with his hands up in the air. Tony, how do you think they did as far as contract signing goes? I mean, they kind of hit all the high notes here with the back-and-forth bickering and then a little bit of physicality before the table and everything around it ends up getting decimated. What did you think of the main event segment tonight?
I thought it was boring. I don't like writing for them, but I felt like this was one of the more boring iterations that they could have come up with. from AJ kind of putting SmackDown down, you know, by saying this is where all the action is, this is where the real fans are. Like, it's the same fucking fans. Like, I hate when they do that. You know, Raw's got the best fans. What? Shut up. I don't know, their conversations were boring, and I don't know, man, it's just, I know it's wrestling, so we're supposed to take away our preconceived notions of conversation, but this sounded like they were reading the script, and nobody ever wants that from their entertainment on television. Felt like they were hitting their notes and saying their things that they thought were clever, but were just kind of cliche. I mean, he literally pointed at his shirt to read it. So the match is going to be great, and that's what we're watching this for. So I can't get too hung up on a contract signing. But it just was like, I don't know, man. I guess if I didn't need this contract signing, then there's probably no reason to have it. You don't always need a contract sign. It's kind of a given that it's going to happen. I mean, Braun made a fucking match in the beginning of the show just by saying he's going to have a match, so contract signings always seem so unnecessary and or arbitrary for me. But hey, the match should be good. Should be good. We also thought AJ versus Shinsuke was going to be good.
Harry, you want to give us direction or should I just start talking?
Oh, my microphone was muted. Sorry about that. Andrew, what did you think of the segment?
That's fine.
I actually did say something, and then I looked at my phone and realized, oh, shit, my microphone's muted. They probably didn't hear a word I just said.
I got you. So, yeah, that was awful. We wanted to talk about two people that can't really talk. As Tony pointed out, which was a point I was going to hit, AJ read his fucking shirt, and then what did Seth do? Remind us what happened at the last pay-per-view? I did something you didn't do. What? Beat Brock Lesnar. Oh! He went there. Oh! Like, who gives a fuck? Like, AJ Styles has been in wrestling for nearly 20 years, and it took him 18 to get mediocre at a promo. Like, he's still not good. And Seth Rollins, granted he hasn't been in wrestling as long, he doesn't really have it, it's a conviction thing. It's like everything he says just seems bland, and like I don't give a fuck, especially when he's trying to play like any kind of like underdog or like kind of face-esque, even a little bit of face-ish character, like good guy. He sucks as a good guy. He's like, he's such a disingenuous dick. Like, it's hard to really give a fuck what he says. Ugh.
Before you continue here, though, that's actually kind of the exact thought that I had as to why this came off so kind of lackluster, because neither of them has a defined heel or face dynamic here, and neither of them is a particularly good babyface promo.
Correct. And it's just like, it's just rough. And this whole show, we've been saying about almost everything, just it felt forced. It was boring. It was bland. It came off bad. Like, we had Drew McIntyre. We had fucking AJ Styles. We had The Miz. And we were all just like, meh? Like, how the fuck do you do an entire show where nobody even hits a double? Like, I don't even need a home run. I don't need a triple. I just need, like, a double, maybe with a throwing error so he gets the third. Like, and then I'd be happy. But no, we don't even fucking get that.
Something where a sacrifice fly could bring them home.
Exactly! We didn't even get that. Like, Dana Brooke's a perfect sacrifice fly.
Not exactly the best show to celebrate 5 years on, but here we are. Although I will say this much, I do think the worse the episode of Raw, the more entertaining the reaction is, because we tend to rip into it more.
True, and we did spend at least 15 minutes talking about other promotions and other shows at random points, so that tells you something too.
That officially wraps up this episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's get into our final reactions for the show. Favorite match or moment, Tony?
Let me see.
Good luck.
Close Pornhub. Scroll.
You can't pick a Riley Reid video. Stop it.
Page 52.
I feel like he's more Asa Akira than Riley Reid.
No, I'm not Asa Akira at all, actually.
Yeah, Tony didn't come off as Asa Akira kind of guy.
Is that more your modus operandi, Andrew?
No, I'm not even a huge fan of Asa Akira, honestly.
I don't know a whole lot
of this show sucks. I can't think of any. There's a new one. Her name is Venus Sky. She is delicious.
Oh, she's cute.
Man.
She's the one with the tattoo, like, on her back, right? Or, like, on her side?
The cherry blossom.
Spell that
yeah.
real quick.
V-I-N-A Sky. Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. See, I like Honey Gold, too, because she's a nice mixture of the Asian and the melanin.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like the best of both worlds. It's just,
Yeah, she's a mess of a person, but yeah, she's hot.
I don't care about her personality. Sheesh.
I know. Sometimes I dig too deep and I get to know them and I'm like, oh, wow. Oh,
and that's the problem is I'd have to be too deep. When I'm pulling it out from my elbow, I don't really think I care, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
Let's
you know
try
what?
This again, Tony. Favorite match or moment?
Shit. I'm going up and down in my report, and I just don't. Let's go with Alexa Bliss for being a great bitch when she was telling the girls to shut up.
You just like her ass.
Yeah, it's a nice little dumper.
There's that too, Andrew.
Firefly Funhouse.
Andrew, the words you've been waiting for this entire show since we've started having the conversation about this particular person. My favorite match or moment goes to Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans.
Woohoo!
Hey, you know what? That's a good answer. I should, you know, I'm not going to change my answer, but I do want to give credit to them, because I feel like that was a really good moment.
All right, so Tony picked Alexa. Andrew picked Bray. I'm writing these down so that way I can add them to our year-end list once we're done with the show. All right. There's a lot to choose from here, Tony. You can only give me one, though. Greg Watry.
The hairy back. If there were ever a Greg Watry moment, it's that. Because I need to explain. This isn't the worst moment on Raw. It's the dumbest. It's the Greg Watry moment, okay? And this was very, very... This, if you wanted a list of examples, Bayley's, well, this is your life with Alexa Bliss. This, you know, anything Baron Corbin says. And this fucking hairy back segment, for sure.
Who specifically are you putting the blame on for this to give credit or discredit in the year-end tally?
The fucking writers, that's what I'm crediting. I mean, it's not the Usos' fault. They tried.
Creative.
But, yeah, creative.
Oxymoron, if there ever was such a thing. Andrew?
That's the incorrect usage of that.
Okay, correct me. Go ahead. You know you want to.
Okay, well... It would be more ironic than it would be an oxymoron. An oxymoron is two words that are exact opposites, like large shrimp.
You mean jumbo shrimp?
That also could work.
He was just giving you an example of like two words. It didn't necessarily have to be a thing.
Very well.
Anyway, though, Greg Watry. The hairy back was fucking stupid. But so much of the show is just awful and all kind of ran together and just, it's all one giant pile of suck. This is rough.
Would you like me to give mine while you try to come up with one specifically?
Yeah, you do that.
All right. I'm going to go with creative as well, but not for the Usos and Revival thing. I'm going to go with creative for the distinct lack of booking an opportunity that they took by just coming out and announcing the participants in the respective Money in the Bank ladder matches rather than actually having people attempt to qualify for them. Using the same cliche formula to announce the participants for both matches, when you know SmackDown's probably going to do something where they actually have people have matches in order to get into Money in the Bank and thus make the match look more important by proxy because you actually have to fight for your spot in the match itself. Andrew, you got anything for me?
I mean, since we're just burying creative, I'll just go creative too, but I'll say it's because they haven't named Naomi's fucking finisher the thick-legged moonsault. I'm still mad about that.
Tony concurs with your assessment, but disagrees for creative for different reasons. Uncreative. Anyway. Oh, I shudder to think where these numbers are going to land. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
4.
Andrew?
All right, so doing math, because there was a lot to take in. Lucha House Party showed up, so that drops it by half a point. So I was going to say 3.5, but that drops it to a 3. But, as we've established from last week, my love of the Bray Wyatt Firefly Funhouse tends to skew my rating, because that's just fantastic. But this wasn't as good as last week. So I can't quite give it the full point. So I'll say 3.75.
You son of a bitch. It's a good thing I'm going to have to use a calculator for these year-end tallies. I'm with Tony at the Bret Hart special, 4 out of 10. Complete definition throwaway episode of Raw. Nothing you're going to remember come next Monday night here. Absolutely not a damn thing. Good luck with this one, gentlemen. MVP, Tony.
Fucking me for doing another report. let me see.
Sadly, today is one of the few days where I would actually consider writing Tony as his MVP here. Continue.
Yeah. I'm going to go with The Miz. Mainly because of his Miz TV segment. He looked like he was literally having a good time. I think The Miz is at a point in his life where he's like, just like, man, everything is fucking great. and I always like that energy. I've never been the jealous type. So I just, like, Mike The Miz Mizanin, I'm so elated for this guy. But I really enjoyed his work against the dumbass that is Lashley, like calling him out for speaking in third person, telling him basically, like, let's not compare accolades, bro. Like, and, you know, I can't say much about the decision after that segment, but I'm going to give it to The Miz. He just makes me feel comfortable when I watch wrestling.
The resume check by Miz on Lashley was pretty solid. Andrew?
Lacey Evans, because she can curry favor with me any day.
He means that in the whore sense, in case you're following along at home.
Thank you for spelling it out for the idiots. There we go. For the slow kids in the pool, here's what he means.
This is one of those shows where I'm struggling to find one particular person that actually, top to bottom, meant the most to me for the show. It's just because, like I said, everything was so forgettable.
Lacey Evans is always good top to bottom for me.
I'm going to go with Alexa for trying her damnedest to keep those two segments together. Between the men's Money in the Bank reveal and the women's Money in the Bank reveal. And then the way that she portrayed herself during the course of the singles match with Naomi as well. I'll go with Alexa. Honorable mention to Becky and Lacey as well. You're welcome, to Andrew. I almost said sorry.
Thank you.
It's been a long fucking 5 years. holy shit, Tony. You'd have told me when we started this April 28th, 2014, we'd still be doing it. I'd have said you were nuts.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure you said I was nuts anyways.
Thankfully, I've never had to see them.
Yeah. Been a good run.
Let's continue it. We'll be back next Monday, assuming the show doesn't drive us to doing anything stupid in the meantime.
Hey, Andrew,
for...
I'll see you soon.
Hey.
Okay, I will state for the record that I'm actually against you two meeting up, because if both of you die, then I have to find two new co-hosts, and fuck that, frankly.
Well, good luck with
that.
I mean,
you just had two come back, so that works.
I don't know who Frankly is, but...
All right.
Jimmy Christopher...
Surely you're not joking.
Demolish. Yeah, well, don't call me Shirley. there's a Jimmy needs someone to pull his reins back, because that boy could rant, and he cusses a lot, and he gets in that territory where he doesn't even make sense anymore. He just wants to yell. So you got to kind of be like, hey. And Rick is one of those guys that, like, I just want to have a good time, man.
And Rick sends you cakes, so, you know, that's always appreciated, too.
Yeah, he did. It was a good time. Good man.
Thanks to Rick and Jimmy C for stopping by tonight. Robert Taylor was supposed to stop by, but unfortunately his work schedule got in the way. Shout out
about
to Robert.
That little Frito-Lay fag.
Wow. Okay. Try to recover from this real quick.
you're interested in finding out what Robert Taylor's up to these days, check out MMA to the Max. Him and his cousin Joe Hudson cover all things related to the world of mixed martial arts. That's available over on the W2M Network, and they have a video format for that that's posted on YouTube as well. Shout out to Robert and Joe. Hopefully everything's going well with their show. Tony, Andrew, and I will be back next week here on the Chair Shot Radio Network with the Ball Reaction. So for Andrew Balazs, the line in the sand, and the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, I am your host. My name is Harry Brothers, and this has been the fifth anniversary episode of the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Tony, this dude's for you. Send us home.
Deuces, bitches.
Like I said right before we closed the show, if you'd have told me 5 years ago we'd still be doing the show to the day, I'd have thought you were crazy. It's been one hell of a ride. I want to thank everybody that's helped us get here in any way, shape, form, or fashion. So to guys like Jay Alito, Bruce Wirt, Greg DeMarco, obviously, people who have filled in as a co-host for us on prior iterations of the show, like Sean Garmer, Paul Leiser, Gary Vaughn, Sean Tomer, Nicholas Marseco, obviously former co-hosts like Rick Ballon, Jimmy Christopher, Tom John, obviously the curtain's pulled back on that many times over the years, Robert Taylor, the new co-host, the new third man, the line in the sand, Andrew Balazs, and most importantly to my Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero. Thank you guys for 5 amazing years of doing this. I look forward to many more. I have an absolute blast doing the show every Monday night after Raw, and I look forward to continuing it for as long as possible. Thank you for listening. This has been the fifth anniversary edition of the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night.